Welcome to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. So happy to be here today with Renee Ritz. She's the executive director of the Blackburn Center, who's helping so many families here in Western Pennsylvania. Renee, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
You are just so full of energy. I think the Blackburn Center is just blessed to have you. How long have you been at this job now?
I've been at the agency for over 8 years. I started working in the direct service field at shelter, and then I was in advocacy and kind of worked my way up to the executive director role.
Wow, wonderful. So you're no stranger to the organization and how it works. Why don't you tell people at home who really aren't too familiar with the Blackburn Center, take us through each different piece of the organization.
Sure. So let me just start with Blackburn. At Blackburn Center, we provide services to those impacted by domestic violence, sexual assault, and other crimes. These services are for anyone. Doesn't matter how you identify, if you're a child, if you're an adult, we can provide those services. And these services range from the first line of contact is our hotline. So if you would have questions or if you are in a crisis situation, we do recommend contacting our hotline. It's 1-888-832-2272. The other number is 724-836-1122. So there's two numbers you can contact us on, but that's really kind of the first line of contact for us is giving us a call on hotline. And we can direct you as whether it's through our services or if we need to get you connected to another resource. So that's really where we start is our hotline. From there, it's our shelter. So a lot of people know about our shelter. It is for intimate partner violence. Our shelter, there is kind of a timeline of how long somebody can stay. Now we work with these individuals because we know housing is tough, especially in Westmoreland County. So we do try and work with them, whether they stay longer or if we can get them into another agency. So we are trying to work with them or into transitional housing, because it is really important that they do find safe, stable housing. And again, you contact our hotline, we can talk about these resources. And while you're at shelter, a big thing is it's communal living. So for some people, it's not always ideal, but it is a safe place. And that's ultimately what emergency shelter is to get families into a safe place so we can work with them on figuring out what the next step is, whether it's work, whether it's if they need their birth certificate, or they need housing or employment. We look at all these options and we try and navigate with them what's best and how we can, get them to the point where they feel comfortable and they're ready and to get out in the world. So that's our shelter. From there, we have counseling and therapy. So our counseling and therapy are two separate. So we have crisis counseling, and that's really working with individuals one-on-one on safety planning, healthy relationships, healthy boundaries, things like that, just to get somebody through a tough situation. Our therapy is done by licensed therapists. So that is more long-term. They're working with the individuals. Most of the time, our therapists see a lot of sexual assault victims. Because of all the trauma and everything, our therapists tend to see that. But we still, like I said, we work with domestic violence, sexual assault, and other crimes. So our therapists can see those impacted by those various victimizations. And then from there, we have support groups. So a big support group is for domestic violence. This is done once a week, and there's different topics each week. For instance, the first one is financial literacy or, financial abuse, neglect, things like that, being alone versus loneliness. Because sometimes when you get out of that abusive relationship, you feel alone. And so kind of talking about that it's a normal feeling, but you're not alone. We're here to support you. There are people out there. So getting those supports in place and they can meet with others, wherever they're at in their journey, they can connect and build on their supports. Another piece to that is our medical advocates. So we go out into the hospitals 24/7. Our local hospitals will contact us on our hotline for domestic violence, sexual assault, and sex trafficking. So if they work with somebody, if a patient comes into the emergency room and they suspect that there is domestic violence or some sort of crime going on, or if it's disclosed to them, they'll contact us and we will send an advocate out there. Our role is to be a support. We are not there to tell them what to do. And this is with any client. We're there just to be a support and provide them with options and resources because we meet the individual where they are. They know their situation best. So we go to our local hospitals. We're doing trainings with our local hospitals on conversational screening because I don't know about you, but sometimes you go to a doctor's appointment and they ask you those questions that's kind of like checking off the box. And we don't want to see that when you're talking about something serious as do you feel safe at home? We understand sometimes it is uncomfortable to ask those questions. So we work with the nurses about how you can phrase it in a way where it's not just let's check off that box, but let's have a conversation. So that's something we do with the hospitals, and we have a great relationship. Our nurses, our hospitals, they're wonderful. I mean, they do an amazing job. Then we have our legal advocates. Our legal advocates, you know, they go out to the magistrates throughout Westmoreland County. A lot of times they don't know these individuals, so they're going out there to try and find them. And when I say individuals, it's those that are impacted by the domestic violence, sexual assault, or other crimes. So they go out there, they find the victim in the case, and they see if they want them there as a support. And really what that advocate is there for is to help them navigate the system. We're not a part of the system, but we support them so they feel a little bit safer because when you go to a magistrate, it's intimidating, especially if you've never been to one. We don't provide legal options. That's not our role as being an advocate. But again, we're support. And a lot of times people don't have supports or don't want to get in, don't want family members involved because it can complicate things or they're ashamed. There's many reasons and they should never feel that way. But there are reasons why they don't want to bring in other people that are close to the situation. So that's what we're there for is an advocate. And then we're also at the courthouse, at the Protection from Abuse Order office. We work there. We help assist with temporary and permanent PFAs. So again, we're there to support individuals, you know, through that process, because again, that's intimidating. We will go to district attorney interviews and also police interviews. So if they contact us and they have a domestic violence, sexual assault, or other crime victim, and they want to do an interview, they give us a call on our hotline. We'll send an advocate out to be a support. Again, we're there to help empower the individual, not to tell them what to do. And then we also have our civil legal department. Our civil legal department is fairly new since 2018. So with that, we can support individuals that are need representation for divorce, custody, supports, things along those lines, bankruptcy. It all has to be related to the victimization. So it has to be related to whether it's the domestic violence or sexual assault, whatever it may be, there has to be that connection. And it is civil, it's not criminal. So we do have an attorney, a paralegal, and a secretary that are able to work with those individuals to get them up and running. But our attorney really obviously handles those cases. And then last but not least, we have our education department. Our education department is in K through 12, and obviously the topics are tailored to the age group. So it can start from empathy to, you know, building healthy supports, then relationships, dating violence. You know, as you get older, the more topics we cover, human trafficking. So we're in there working with the students. And then at higher ed, we have a great relationship with our campuses. So we're in there talking about primary prevention, talking about those root causes, looking at what do you do when a student discloses to you? How do you respond to that? So not only the prevention piece, but also that response piece and how you can support that victim and survivor the best way possible. So we work with our college campuses on that. And then we're on the communities doing trainings at no cost. I should say all our services are provided at no cost. And we're out there just trying to get more awareness throughout the community about the services we offer and talking about it. Because the way to end thing is end violence in general is through education. Because the more you understand it, the more you're aware of it. And the more we can solve these issues and kind of figure out, okay, well, this isn't okay. So how can we stop this? Or what can we do? Or how can we support these individuals better? So really just looking at that prevention piece. But I just shared a lot of information with you all. I don't know if you have any questions, but it is. And if you guys have questions or, you know, want to know more, again, contact our hotline. We will, you know, talk to you about it. We'll get you connected with somebody that maybe can talk to you more about those resources, but feel free to reach out.
Wow. I mean, this is a huge organization with many tentacles now that's probably evolved since you've been there, right? I mean, in the last 8 years, do you want to talk about what you've seen, the evolution and some major changes that the organization has made?
Oh, absolutely. So when I started, we were a smaller, and we still are. So we have 34 staff. But when I started, we were roughly around, I would say 27, 20, yeah, about 27, right? 27 staff, which from going from 27 to 35, 36 staff, that is a big jump. And we expanded too. In 2015, yes, 2015, we expanded to other crimes. So before we were focused on the domestic violence and sexual assault, but we noticed that there is an intersection with other crimes too. And there wasn't a victim service agency in Westmoreland County. So we started providing those services. And when I say other crimes, what I'm talking about is theft, burglary, homicide. And with homicide, we work with those that have been impacted. So obviously, the victim in the case is no longer with us, but the family members, those supports that are going through the criminal justice system, things like that, we're able to be a support for them. There's a lot of different, variations of other crimes, but those are some examples I can share with you. But with that expansion in 2015, it brought in more awareness to Blackburn Center because not only are we focused on domestic violence, but it's the whole thing. We're a comprehensive agency. And then with that recently too, our housing advocate position we have at our shelter. So as you know, and I'm sure the community knows, homelessness is an issue. So really kind of focusing on that aspect in housing, but it's specific to those that have been impacted by crime. So we have a housing advocate that works with our clients, specific to domestic violence, but also like sexual assault and other crimes, and talking to them about what resources are out there, getting them into certain systems or applications so they can get housing quicker, because we really do. Ultimately, we want to prevent violence. We want to make sure people are feeling safe. And the biggest thing is to have stable housing. So that's something, one of the many things our housing advocate does is work with our clients and figure out best options for them, whether it's in this county or if we have to get them connected to another county. And another piece of our agency is that we've expanded on is our underserved populations. I think it's really important to talk about this because, again, when we expanded, we really focused on underserved. And when I say underserved, that involves people with disabilities who have been victimized because they are victimized at higher rates. It also includes trafficking victims. So human trafficking victims is really a focus of what we do. Mental health, substance abuse. I mean, those impacted by all those vulnerabilities, they are targeted a lot of times by perpetrators. So we really try and get out there and provide trainings and work with different agencies. I mean, we have great relationships with the community. The agencies are wonderful and they want to know, like, hey, how can we collaborate more? And ultimately, that's what we want, because we are not the experts in everything. And we want to make sure we're working with them because if it's somebody with a disability that is in a domestic violence situation, well, let's come together. Let's figure out, if this individual is ready to leave that situation, let's talk about the resources we need in place to get them out. It's that collaboration. So that's been pretty big, the underserved program, and really focusing on those areas because it really is. It's a high percentage of those that are impacted by violence.
I mean, there's the stories that you see and the people that you help. I mean, I'm sure they're just absolutely so grateful for that. And there is, just so much like thought and effort and time put into that process to make it happen. But it really does make a difference. I mean, how many clients do you usually help a year or a month, or is there a quota or, a number that you try to reach, or does it vary from year to year?
It does vary. So the pandemic was a little bit challenging just because when everybody was at home and they weren't able to work or leave, it became harder for us to get in contact with our clients. But it's kind of going back now. Our numbers have increased. So overall, because there's hotline phone calls you can count, there's counseling, there's therapy. So roughly altogether, I would say around 2,800 clients a year. I mean, just to kind of give you an estimate of what that looks like, and it is a lot. Whether it's a first-time contact, I mean, there's individuals that we worked with for counseling, but now we're working with in the legal advocacy aspect. So it's not only just in one department, it's kind of spread out. So it's very tough. I wish we did not have to do this work, because nobody deserves to go through any sort of violence or deal with any sort of crime. But it's important work that we do, and having the support of the community and our donors and everybody, it means so much.
Oh, that is amazing. I love talking to you. Renee Ritz is the executive director of the Blackburn Center in Greensburg. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about how they're reaching people on social media about something called financial abuse that's occurring in 98% of all abusive relationships. You're listening to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Classic Hits 107.1. Listen live at WHJBFM.com.
Welcome back to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. I'm here today with Renee Ritz, and she is the executive director of the Blackburn Center. And she is just doing some wonderful work helping people out of these very, very delicate situations. And what's interesting is, as I see how active you are on social media, constantly educating, I wonder if your education department runs it, because it's very good. But on there, you talk about the number one reason why people stay or return to an abusive relationship is finances. Why don't you expand on that a little bit?
Absolutely. So, and I do have to say, we reach out to our whole agency. So we have the person that does our social media. She's wonderful. She's not through our education department, but she works with us on our social transformation committee. And our committee is really focused on primary prevention, the work we do at Blackburn Center. She's been with us for years, so she really gets our mission and understands it. So we do reach out to our staff and say, hey, what topic should we look at this month? And they'll throw us, like, send us ideas. We'll send it over to our social media person, and they get it out there. So they're wonderful. So I just want to mention that. But to answer your question about financial abuse, it is a major problem. And I don't think it's talked enough about. So in domestic violence situations, a lot of times you'll hear, especially if you're answering hotline or talking to someone, well, it's not abusive. It's just, they may be controlling my money, or I'm not able to spend things. Well, that's abusive behavior. So it doesn't always start out that financial abuse. It's sometimes verbal or emotional. And then it builds into that control of, well, I make the money, I'm holding on to it, or I'm only giving you $20 a month, and that's for groceries. I mean, we've had situations where they monitor their spending. And when I say spending, it's also gas money too. So by them monitoring the spending, that monthly spending, and they're monitoring how much gas you put in the car, that limits too where an individual can go, especially if they're in an abusive situation or trying to get out. They can't go to our agency. They can't stop here and want to talk to us because they don't have gas money. Right? Because they have to be very careful in what they spend the money with. So that's one example. Financial abuse can be, maybe they did work at some point, and they're still currently working, but the partner, the abusive partner, is saying, you know, we need more money. We need to bring it in. I'll hold on to it, and then we'll put it in our joint savings account, or I'll put it in my account so we don't touch it, right? That manipulation. So they're starting to control the situation. And it's a gradual process. It's not something where it automatically starts out and they're financially controlling the individual. It's little by little, to the point of, once they finally realize this is financial abuse, they're not sure how to get out of it. And there's so many different examples, but it is a problem, because trying to get out of a situation and you don't have finances, it's tough for an individual, especially if children are involved. I mean, even if children aren't involved, it's tough for a single person. But when you have kids and financially you don't have money to get them food, or you can't take them to school, whatever it may be, because of the gas money, these are all reasons why someone does not leave. Mm-hmm. So it is very important why we talk about it, because we can go on and on about all these examples. And it's really important the community knows that financial abuse is abuse, no matter which way you look at it. It is a form of abuse, and it is just as bad as physical abuse. It can be just as bad. We've heard from our clients that say, you know, at least physical abuse, the bruising goes away. these other things stay with you and you can't get them back, or it takes longer to try and get to your goal. So with somebody taking your finances, it's really hard. It really is.
Online abuse and harassment. Let's talk about that, because it's almost seems impersonal, or maybe people don't realize the consequences when they're not face to face confronting someone about it, but it's very, very serious.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of, and again, I'm focusing on domestic violence, but we see it when it's maybe two friends that are no longer friends, right? And they are upset, they get in an argument, whatever it may be. They go to social media. And social media is like a way for people to communicate with the whole world, which is scary because anybody can see this. And so when you have somebody in an intimate partner relationship, and this is another thing to keep in mind, they do harass, whether they don't say the person's name, but they can say things, make posts, say it's Facebook, or take a video and make a comment without giving who they're talking about. They're still talking about that individual, and that individual knows, the people around them know, that becomes harassment. They start to follow them more, and that can lead into stalking, right? We can get into all these different avenues, but the harassment piece is very concerning, because once you take it to that next level, then it is concerning for anybody that's going through any sort of abuse, because the limit's getting higher and higher, which is a safety concern. So with the harassment, there's many forms of it, but yeah, social media, getting on there, people just saying whatever they want to say, or in saying certain things that maybe shouldn't be stated on there about a certain person, which really, it does affect that person too, or even the threats. Well, I'm going to post this, or I'm going to say this, right? That's, you know, if you don't do what I say, or if you don't listen to me, do you really want that? Do you really want the public to know? There's a lot of different ways harassment is done. And it's concerning for our clients.
My goodness. And, you know, young people really need to be aware of that, yes. Right? I mean, it's serious, and it can end up in criminal charges.
Correct. And that's something it is. You know, I know social media is huge with the younger generation. And it is. It's fun. It's exciting. If you've nothing to do, hey, I'm going to get on my phone, look on social media. I get it. But there is still a way of going about it. It's different if you're looking on there, and not only what they post, but who they're talking to, because it is concerning sometimes with these, I don't want to say predators, but that's what they are. You don't always know who you're talking to and what you post. An individual that you don't even know people are friends with. I've talked to so many individuals, whether they're clients, family members, friends. Oh, I'm friends with this person. I don't know who they are, but they're friends with so-and-so, so they must be okay. Well, it's concerning because you don't know them. And so a lot of times the younger generation, they post whatever, right? They're very happy to share, which is great, but it also can be concerning because their safety needs to be a priority. And sometimes they're not always thinking that way. And I wish they didn't have to think that way, but you have to be careful what you post. And even posting location, like where you're at, you take a picture and you're posting where you're at that time. You just have to be cautious because you don't know who's watching or who's looking at these things. Now, if you have private settings, private things like that, wonderful. But if you don't, especially with TikTok and all these other things, it can be concerning for the younger generation, and just kind of being aware of these things, that maybe not always posting where you're at or what you're doing every minute, because safety could be a real concern.
Definitely. I mean, people need to be aware and keep that in mind, and it's probably happening more and more as you move through all this. So let's talk about how people can support you. I mean, your agency, I'm sure, is partially funded from the work that you do, right? It contracted mm-hmm. yep. work from the county and other agencies and things Correct. Like that, but you absolutely need donors. So let's talk about how people can help.
No, absolutely. And let me just say, our community, our donors, they're wonderful. They've been wonderful even before me, but just being in this role now and seeing what they donate, I mean, it's unbelievable. So let me just say thank you to the community. But it is something that is important, because when funding changes or things come up, it's so important with your all support to be able to continue to provide these services, to be able to continue to have the staff to provide the services. So, you know, just even going to our website, if you go to our website, check it out, blackburncenter.org. But if you go on there, there is you can click on where it says donate items. You click on that, and there's a shelter needs list. This is updated monthly. And right around the holidays too, it's really big. So, and I'll get into that, but it's updated monthly based on the needs of our clients, because ultimately what we're able to provide our clients is from donations. So again, everything our community has donated to us is huge, but there are certain times where, you know, if it's not on the list, we can't take it because we don't have a ton of space. So we partner with other agencies that are able to take it, that we can give our clients vouchers for, so then they can go shop. And for instance, Christian Layman, St. Vincent de Paul, YWCA, they're now a resource that we've given them, you know, work with them where they may have clothing or something where we can send our clients to go there and they can look at the items. So let me just mention that. But with the holidays coming up, so it is really important that, you know, if you guys can go on our needs list, see what needs there that we have on there. I know big thing is gas cards and gift cards, just because we give it out to our clients, because as you know, finances, you know, with everything going on, it's a lot. So even for our clients to get from point A to point B, or if they are residing at our shelter, you know, we want to make sure they're able to get their to their job or take their kids to school, you know, things like that. So those gift cards really come in handy, or sometimes to even just go to Giant Eagle or Walmart, you know, to be able to give them that gift card. So that was on our needs list. So it is important if the community, you know, if you always, if you want to donate to us, feel free to check it out. But I will say our donors, you guys are all wonderful and we appreciate everything you do.
Let's talk about how people, can they volunteer to help you as well?
Yes. So we have a, what we call is crisis intervention training program. It's a long title there, but that is something. So depending on the volunteer work, so let me backtrack a little bit. So depending on what the individual is interested in, and again, you can contact our hotline and we can direct you to that point of contact that can talk to you more about this. But with our volunteer program, there's kind of different levels. So first level is maybe you don't want to provide the direct service, but you want to help out in other ways. Give us a call, because one thing we always look for in the community, and we do this all the time, is we have client packets. And I wish I had something on hand to show you guys, but it's a packet that we get all this individual pieces of paper, and then we put it into a packet, which we give to our clients. It has a lot of information, a lot of great information. So it takes time to do that. You have, let me think, probably 10 or 11 pieces that go into one packet, and we give out quite a few. I'm trying to think, maybe sometimes it could be given out if we're doing a training, around 200 a week, 250 a week, if it's a big training, plus, you know, the individual contact we have with our clients. So it is something we always give out and we always need support with. And it could, anybody can volunteer to do that. They could come in for 2-3 hours and we'll have everything ready and they can make packets. That next level would be if somebody is interested in our direct service piece. And that's when they go through that crisis intervention training, counseling training program. And the reason being is because the work we do here, there needs to be, our funders require a lot of training, but also the work we provide, it's really important everybody feels comfortable in providing that service and goes through that training. So it's on that other, that extra layer of confidentiality too, because a lot of people already know this with our agency, it's very confidential and it's for our client's safety. So with that being said, they have to go through this training, and then there's avenues that we can go on, whether it's hotline, or if they're interested in the legal advocacy aspect or working, supporting shelter staff and clients. I mean, there's different avenues, but the biggest thing I want to mention is our walkabout event. We have a ton of volunteers that don't go through the training. They aren't making packets, but they're helping us prep for the walkabout event, which is next year. It's going to be in April. We'll know next month the date, so stay tuned. But with the walkabout event, it's just kind of getting ready for it, even the day of, having those volunteers, because without the volunteers, I mean, our staff's wonderful, but without you guys as volunteers there to support us, it'd be difficult to get everything in place. So that's another aspect. When we have events, if individuals want to volunteer, give us a call.
Renee Ritz is the executive director of the Blackburn Center. We're so thankful that you came on the show today. You're a wealth of information. You're doing a tremendous job. And I want to make sure I say that publicly, because I know it's a difficult job. Please give my best to all of your staff. Thank you all for listening to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB.